coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am your co-host, Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, my life mate, the Harley Quinn to my Joker, the Jedi, Cole Houston. Yeah, that's how we're coming off the top with that, Cole.
I'm sorry, I took a vow of silence for this episode.
So you've joined us. We're on issue 195. 195. 195
is next week, kids.
No, 198 is next week. I can't. I've been doing this story arc so long.
I want to revisit that whole lost episode thing way back in 81 or whatever that was.
Time is a flat circle. I've lost all.
Point is a flat circle.
I've lost. Yes, I've lost all. Reference to space and time.
Most of you remember One Face.
One Face. Old One Face. So you found us in the end, the ultimate episode of the Roguish Eyes story arc. You have heard us tell the Riddler, Catwoman, Penguin, and Two-Face, and now we've come to the egress. To quote P.T. Barnum,
full flat circle. This we are now going to bring you Roguish Eyes Barrel of Laughs.
Oh my God. It's all day with this, all day with this, and I think I could safely say we are honored and excited at our guest to speak to this tonight. Been on the show a few times. Every time it's a barn burner. It's a barn burner every time.
Yeah, I'm running out of barns, frankly. But,
long time friend and friend of the show and brilliant, just in a Asmodeus Watchmen sort of way. I'm pretty sure that she's bringing about the end times all on her own.
The
Dame Kelly Long has joined us tonight, and I'm very excited for this. Not only because Kelly and I haven't talked in way too long. But also, we get to talk about the Joker. I was saying earlier to these two that, and I'm going to take pictures, and I would like Cole to post these to this issue, of the notes that I've made over the last 5 weeks.
Yeah, I've been hearing about this, and this definitely needs coverage, because otherwise, this needs to belong to the ages. It needs to outlive us all.
I've become Rorschach. One day, from the ground, people are going to look up at me and ask me to cut a podcast, and I'm just going to look down on them and say no. That's what's going to happen. But yeah, so the Joker. This is big. This is a big one to unpack. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard. Here's where I'd like to start, and I'm going to ask both of you this question. What does the Joker... And I'm slowly sliding into a Joker voice right now.
You are. Like,
you can't not. What does...
I know. It just all of a sudden it starts with a little... Oh, wow. That one went a little bit off the Joker.
Slightly awkward.
I feel weird now. I feel weird. What does the...
I'll get a tissue.
What does the Joker mean to the both of you? Like, he means so much on so many different levels and so many different planes. Like there's a ton of substrata when it comes to the Joker. But what does he mean to you? Like in terms of the comics, in terms of the mythos. Like where
I'm gonna
does
have to fall? Let Kelly jump in on this one first, partially due to the fact that out of two of the previous four issues of this particular arc, there was one where I had to play dad to. Eddie and Andy.
Oh, that was a good episode.
Then immediately after, Andy had to play dad to me and Steve. So,
right.
So now we're pretty well calmed down. So actually, Kelly has to play mom to me and Andy. Okay. We're gonna go right back into the dick jokes.
That's right.
I'll bring it on.
Yeah.
So I think I think what the Joker really is for Batman is he's the balance. And when you look at a guy like Batman, who is vengeance laden, he's trained his whole life. He's so focused that he has lost his what's the word that I want to use? He's lost his morality about it. And he's a lot like, you know, I can bring in some Jurassic Park here. You know, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yes, yes.
You know, here's the Joker. Know,
I play. We're always ready for anyone to ever
go into Jurassic Park.
Bring Jeff Goldblum into the mix. Always defer to Jeff Goldblum on all things.
But the Joker is the same way. His focus is the same. I mean, he is, yeah, he's crazy, but he's definitely focused most of the time, in my favorite stories anyway. Mm-hmm. But then you have, it's the same kind of thing. The morality is skewed, but it's the same. They're mirrored images of each other. And I don't believe, you know, I've read this before, but I don't believe that one really exists well without the other.
That's good. I like that.
I think that the best authors have recognized the fact that they are, you know, to go back to Two-Face, they are literally the opposite sides of a coin.
Yeah.
Where they have to. It's like in the movie The Dark Knight, you know, they can't exist without each other.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They truly are destined to. And in many ways, it almost seems like what the Joker represents is literally Batman's opposite number, more so than in that story Player on the Other Side, which was a Batman special or Detective Comics special years ago that I've talked about on this show, which introduced the character the Wrath, had a blatantly opposite origin to, you know, his parents were criminals who were killed by cops, so he becomes like the anti-Batman. But the reality is, I think Joker is the inevitable afterbirth of Batman. Batman, Bruce Wayne's parents get killed, he turns into this vengeance machine. That vengeance machine, in turn, creates this other entity. Up to this point, he is without. It's sort of like this constantly spinning yin with no balance of yang, if you will.
Well, and neither of them come
show
up.
It's not meant to be a penis joke. Until I just made it into one.
Yeah. But neither of them show up, like, you know, without lots of preparation. You know, the Joker doesn't show up all willy-nilly. He's got a plan. And the Batman always has a plan. He has a gadget, or he has just a thing. Even the weird shark repellent on the Batman TV show. There was always something. And Batman's the same way.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And see, when we start talking about what the one of the other questions that we asked when we started this was, do these villains either dehumanize or humanize Batman? I think that in the truest form, the Joker represents Batman's humanity.
Sure.
And I think that because without the Joker, without that presence, without that, to go full Campbell, early full Campbell. Kelly's here. I always go full Campbell when Kelly's here. Without
undermine my whole thing about not bringing her in solely for the classics.
Invoke
damn Campbell.
I wanna sound smart around Kelly. All right. The atonement, because that's what that is. There is no character in Batman's universe that tests him as much as the Joker, and there's no character in Batman's universe that pulls him back from the abyss like the Joker. The Joker is the one thing that Batman will not do. Joker represents Batman crossing a line that Batman refuses to cross, and without the Joker there to show Batman what happens if he crosses the line, I think Batman would have crossed the line a long time ago.
Certainly.
Yeah, he pulls Batman's moral compass out of the Bermuda Triangle.
Right.
Yeah.
Just long enough.
What kind of moral compass does the anti-hero have? I mean, like, this is your classic anti-hero. He doesn't follow the rules. He doesn't have to. He's a billionaire. No billionaire follows the rules. He just pays people off. You know, they just make up their own shit. You know, so
that's right. If you keep... can't be a collegiate athlete star, be a millionaire or a billionaire.
Those
are the two jobs where you can do whatever you want, apparently.
Apparently. But who answers that person that has no consequence? That's why Batman's cool. He's a billionaire, but his parents died.
Right.
So he has had to deal with things in a way that his humanity doesn't always show up. Like I've said this, I think you and I talked about this when we were talking about our favorite graphic novel on Hey Kids Comics. It was like 2 years ago. And I remember bringing up the reason why heroes aren't cool because of their abilities. Heroes are cool because of their humanity.
Right.
And
right.
The Joker brings that, you know, he pulls it back out every time.
Another really cool thing about the Joker, and we did the catalyst for this entire story arc was a show that Cole and I did, and I was reminded of it because I was watching I watched all of the episodes of Key and Peele in the last like week and a half. Literally just watched them all. I'm like, Lacey hasn't seen them. Like you have to really twist my arm. Not to go too aside, but I completely forgot when they were talking about Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer, and he's doing the line graph, and he's like, and they cross at Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I'm like, I've been trying to figure out how to explain this movie to people so they'll watch it. This is how you explain Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Thank you so much. But we did an entire episode on Don't Mess with the Batmans. Because
you don't mess with the Batmans.
And mainly because Batman is batshit crazy. Like he messes with his villains more than anyone. Like he will just screw with you as a villain. Like you have to be insane to keep coming back for more. Joker is the only villain that'll mess with the Batmans and get away with it.
Yeah.
But Kelly hit a really interesting point earlier, and that was that it hadn't even occurred to me that when we talk about the fact that Batman can win any fight if he has enough time to prepare, so can the Joker.
Yes.
Joker's always prepared.
That's a good point.
He's never, you know, he's not, he's controlled chaos.
The Joker brings, it's that chaos. What the Joker brings to the table is literally the anti-Batman in that he doesn't have to prepare because he is infinitely adaptable. There is no situation that he is ill-prepared for because it doesn't matter. There is always something he can utilize.
So
something, someone, some situation. What I would love to see is something like, a story where you build for a year in a Batman title. Somebody going around and doing, little sides where you see somebody doing something that doesn't seem to make any sense. Why are we bothering coverage here? And then have a big reveal about a year or so later that it was all these little things like, reprogramming some things, planting some bombs, setting some situations in motion so it all comes together as part of a grander scheme. Because, what's the best way for your getaway car to get away is if you drive past the place that you already set up a bomb 17 months ago.
Right.
Nobody's going to be able to figure out where that bomb came from because they don't expect it to. They don't expect people to be playing a long game. And Joker, I think, in many ways, plays a very long game. It would be interesting to see a story where you, especially if somebody could find something in what's already happened, what others have written, that they could draw together into an even longer game.
Right.
Because I could see the Joker having, all this has all just been building to something.
That man is Grant Morrison. And one day, his crazy ass is going to... He's been doing it since he was 8 years old. So you just haven't known it yet. So the next question I kind of want to look into is, and we talked about it a little bit, but I think it's with other villains, but I think it's more important with Joker, is... What does the Joker represent, not just to Batman, but to us as readers? Because you've got what Joker represents. You've got the duality between Joker and Batman, and you see him fight. But when it comes to, you are reading the book. You the reader, and you've seen, whether it's Death in the Family or Killing Joke or, a plethora of other Joker, other books that feature the Joker. Mm-hmm. Even Justice, which was pretty awesome, that he was the monkey wrench in the villain's plan because they didn't invite him to the party.
Right.
What does he represent to you as a comic book reader?
He is, for me, the one that they have to take the greatest risk on. you know, they kind of, they didn't bring, you know, in the first Batman, we'll go into even the movies.
Let's go.
So they bring the Joker in the Tim Burton, and really, I mean, it worked because it was the first Tim Burton movie. Nobody had even dreamed that a Batman movie could be made because, you know, nobody
thought about it.
Well, they'd
only spent the better part of quarter century building to that.
Right.
Right, and then it shows up. So they pick the main guy, which I never agree with. You never go with your best villain in your first movie. But
yeah.
then they bring back, you know, when Christopher Nolan does it, that's why I was so irritated he was in the second movie. Like, what are you going to do in the third movie? This is the biggest guy.
Right.
He is the greatest risk. And they, you know, I know they always talk about the greatest risk is always going to be like your first venture out. Not necessarily. Your greatest risk is your biggest, is the one that people love the most. And so everybody has a piece of their Joker in them because they want to see who gets away with, almost gets away with it. Because he sometimes actually gets away with it. Killed Barbara Gordon in The Killing Joke. Well, he didn't kill her, but he, you know, he maims Barbara Gordon. It changes lives. He switches timelines on a dime.
Oh yes, even failing to turn Batman into himself, he still, you know, there's so much that's left in the aftermath. He still succeeds even when he fails.
Exactly.
Because it doesn't matter. As long as he succeeds on some level, it's feeding that part of him.
Right. So he is the greatest asset. What are they going to do with him? And that's why, I mean, I loved Heath Ledger as the Joker. I thought he was brilliant. You know, I didn't hate Jared Leto, but I really felt Heath Ledger brought more into it. But that's my opinion, you know, whatever. We haven't gotten there yet. But I know it's going to come up. But he is. He's your greatest asset. It's the balance. People don't ask about Batman and Robin. They ask about Batman and the Joker.
That's true. And
a good point.
And go ahead, Cole.
Well, also, as a reader, I think what the Joker brings is – Joker is the dark mirror. And not just Batman's dark mirror. The obvious thing is to look at the Joker and say, well, yes, he's the dark mirror of Batman. He is Batman's opposite, his reverse. He is the Wonderland Batman, as it were. But the reality is the Joker represents the dark mirror of humanity. He's right, holding up himself as the mirror and saying, we're all just a little shy of me.
That's really a
every good point. Single one of you. Could be me. You're just better at not being me.
Yeah, what's the quote from the comic? You are one bad day away from being me. Yeah, that's...
He addresses Batman in this, but ultimately, I think deep in his psyche, he feels that he is the answer to this big question, the thin veil of civilization.
Sure.
Is him. He's the proof of concept, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he surrounds himself often with those who are at least in the neighborhood.
I want to fall back on what we were talking about earlier. I really view so when I pick up a book that I don't that has the Joker in it, especially if it was like one of the Scott Snyder, like recently, the either Grant Morrison or Scott Snyder, if you want to go back to before we knew what was going to happen, before the internet, mm-hmm. or before the internet was so prevalent in listing synopsises and things like that of comics, you know, your Killing Joke with Alan Moore, your Frank Miller's, the Joker is two things. He's the catalyst, like you were saying. The Joker can stop a comic on a dime, can turn it 180 degrees, can do – the Joker is that force. Mm-hmm. But the Joker also represents, I think, our humanity as people. Because when we look at books like Superman and you have like mm-hmm. and you have Doomsday, or you look at Green Lantern and you have Sinestro, or you look at Thor and you have Loki, or you know any book like that, they don't represent they're high fantasy. Mm-hmm. There's no grounding in those books, really. When you look at Batman, that's your grounding. So when mm-hmm. you introduce the Joker into a story, one of two things is two things are going to happen. Number one, it's going to be the catalyst for something happening. Very rarely do we see a Joker story where at the end of the issue, there's cuffs slapped on him and he goes back to Arkham.
Well, that's Scooby-Doo in the Scooby-Doo mysteries. Yeah,
right.
I mean,
and number
it's like, let's see who this evil clown is. It's Old Man Joker.
It's Old Man.
It's stupid, Joker. You're dressed as a clown. Yes, but you'd never suspect, would you?
Yeah. And number two,
you got me.
Batman is not going to kill the Joker. So your faith in humanity is going to be restored at the end of that book, regardless of what happens. Because do not forget, the Joker caused us as humanity to commit to break the first commandment. As humanity. Caused us as people to break the first commandment, to pick up a phone, dial a 1-800 number, and say, kill Jason
Todd.
Jason Todd,
yeah.
The Joker did that.
Right, yeah.
To us, the greatest crime the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing us that it wasn't the Joker being written in that. That was us. We did it because the Joker.
Well, and that really goes to my point, because, and what you're saying about how Batman will not kill the Joker, that. We spoke in the first episode at length about how the Riddler is the Sphinx that challenges the hero.
Right. That
in
threshold.
In many ways, this is the darker Sphinx that truly challenges the hero. That challenges the hero to give up the last shred of heroism. The Joker wants Batman to kill him. It's like Bat 7.
It's like, what's in the box? And it's Jason Todd's hand.
What's in the box? Oh, it's Mexican.
What's in the box? What's in the box?
It was just a box of tacos. Fourth meal.
It's fourth meal. It was fourth meal. That's what was in the box. No, but it's like Jason Todd's head. I want to see that. I want to see Alfred, like, or Lucius Fox. It could even be Morgan Freeman at that point. And Batman to get the box in the desert, open it up, it's Jason Todd's head.
This is the story of how Alfred, or how Jason Todd's head was in a Taco Bell box.
Oh my God!
Are you Shawshank Redemptioning this? And just like that,
I am Shawshanking it. I am so Shawshanking it.
Andy Dufresne was free.
I will Shawshank all over that.
Oh man, you're gonna need a towel.
You need a tarp, dude.
You're right.
It's like Gallagher, really, to be honest.
So we've talked about this in each issue, but we have to do it. I want to do it. Let's talk about references to the Joker in modern pop culture, like, you know, what can we call from for the creation of the Joker? I'm just going to get out in front of it. There's a very obvious one that Bob Kane and Bill Finger have said. This is why we created the Joker, and that was from the movie The Man Who Laughs. Conrad Veidt. If you've ever seen it, it's obvious. Dead. It's right there.
Yeah, I mean, the illustration looks like they. You know, Bob Kane probably went in front of the theater and looked at a lobby card and sketched it out. Said, yeah, just make the skin pasty white and the hair green, but otherwise, you know, it is Conrad Veidt.
That's pretty much right. That's pretty much it. Because in the actual interview with Bob Kane, which I keep saying that and I keep expecting Eddie just to pop up behind me and put me in a chokehold.
Yeah, well, yeah, just
Bill Finger!
Send you straight to BillFingerBang.com.
Oh, Kelly, we bought, as a result of this story arc, we now are the sole proprietors of BillFingerBang.com.
Yes!
We own that domain name.
That's
the best news all day.
That's what happens when Eddie and I are on a podcast together. I get out my wallet and register BillFingerBang.com. But he says that...
During the show, no less.
They were trying to figure out what
the end of the show. BillFingerBang.com.
I disappear for a while, and they're like, "Where's Andy?" And I come back. I'm like, "Gentlemen, we own BillFingerBang.com."
Go listen to the Penguin episode.
I will.
Cool cigarettes and fingerbang.com.
What they say is that Jerry Robinson walked into the room where they were writing and creating Batman, and with a Joker playing card, like one of the bicycle Joker cards, because they were trying to come up with what the Joker was going to look like. And
what do you do with these crappy extra cards that nobody ever plays with, guys?
Right.
And, my version of what happened.
And they looked at him and they said, that looks like Conrad Veidt. And so Bill Finger whipped out a book or a magazine that had a picture of him, and then they pointed at that. So literally that's what happened. Like, they were like, that's him. Let's do
it. That's the guy.
That's our guy.
I have to say, the brilliance there was, for I don't know if it was the nature of that particular card, be it from Bicycle or any of the other companies, or just the fact that thank goodness, I don't think the character would have survived had he been dressed in Motley.
Right.
It would have been an interesting take.
It would have been silly, and then take it a step further, and only Bobby Blakey will get this, if the little dangling balls on the horns looked like they were on, like, electric or glowing.
So weird.
Yeah, that's a story that one day I'll tell when we talk about it. We need to get Bobby on the show sometime and talk.
God, he really does look like Conrad Veidt, though. So much. Like, even without the makeup on. Like, you look at him now and you're like, that could be it. But
Thing about it is, had Batman been created today in the same way, if somebody said, hey, that looks like, you know, somebody I just saw in this movie that's real creepy, you know, like maybe Gary Sinise at his creepiest.
Wow. Your hatred for Gary Sinise shows no bounds.
No, I just, that one time that he creeped me out. Ironically, it was in Apollo 13.
Right, I was going to say.
How did that happen?
God damn it, Lieutenant Dan.
I was fine up to that point, but if somebody did that today, almost immediately they would be called out. Like, oh, well, it's so obvious that you're Nick Fury in the...
Right.
I don't think that Batman would work if it was created today. I don't think they could get away with it at all. It's like Snow White. Nobody could make that movie today for kids. They'd be like, oh my God, this is terrible. None of that would work. Batman would never...
Yeah, it's like that Alice in Wonderland. Somebody was... actually, Paul Dini himself was complaining on Facebook recently, that I believe it must be his wife, that doesn't like the scene with the carpenter and the walrus because of all the cherubic little oysters that were sent to their inevitable doom. And so I had to point out that it was a cautionary tale that about conservation, because by harvesting the larval oysters, the shoals were largely depleted, and ultimately the walrus wound up taking a spokeshave wound to the head, and was the carpenter feasted on during the lean months of the winter.
Of course, Cole.
That goes on a t-shirt.
Yeah, it got a little dark there after a while.
But yeah, so I think we call that the Mark Millar effect. Where everything he created for the Ultimate Universe was a representation of somebody that existed, and he got away with it somehow. Like, nobody called him on the carpet for it.
Yeah, like, Nick Fury was obviously...
Samuel L. Jackson. Like, there was no doubt.
To the point that there was the casting director had no choice.
Right?
It was like society had put a gun to his head. I can't even pick up the phone and try to approach David Hasselhoff.
Hey, easy. That was the best representation of Nick Fury you will ever see on any screen, sir. No, but yeah, that's a touchy subject. That's like him and Gary Sinise. You gotta be careful.
Don't do that.
You gotta walk on. You gotta walk on eggshells around him and Gary Sinise. But who else can you think of that they could have over time? Because I mean, the other really cool thing about the Joker is he's so eternal that he has evolved. His origin story, the character itself, has evolved from his inception to now so many times over that it's funny that they would have used that and picked up on it in The Dark Knight.
Right.
That, you know, he has no real origin. He keeps telling lies about how he came and, you know, how he was created.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Was very much a nod to the way that Alan Moore was allowed to come shy of giving him an origin. But the reality is, it doesn't matter. I mean, he's practically the Anakin Skywalker of the DC Universe, because he just sort of was willed into existence.
Right. Right, it was the Metachlorians and the Ace Chemicals.
Well, I mean, what really happened when Denny O'Neil brought him back? You know, when Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams, like, bring the Joker back. And it's we're back on track. You know, the Comics Code Authority, all those years of all that all the fluff pieces and the Batmites and all that.
Yeah, at that point, Joker was remanded to doing balloon animals at children's parties and not killing them. He was just doing balloon animals. He would go home and have a TV
dinner. He was doing all the boners, yes.
Yeah, the boners.
The boners, which if I am friends with you on Facebook, I will present you with a lovely boner Joker sketch on your birthday every year.
I've gotten many from Kelly. I've gotten many a boner from Kelly.
We will post it on BillFingerBang.com. Well, not just on FingerBang.com, because that's a whole site.
It's a different story.
Important kids, be sure to put Bill before.
Bill.
Yeah.
Please put Bill. But yeah, I mean, like, then they actually start bringing the character into a darker origin instead of just being the guy that, the sad guy at the party.
Absolutely.
He's also, you know, he's allowed to be the stone cold killer he was from the outset. I remember, I was not a big DC fan prior to the Crisis on Infinite Earths. I owned a few titles. I watched, I read some stuff, and I just wasn't, you know, I was in the make mine Marvel school in a big way. Okay. And then Steve McCauley, who was on the show about Two-Face, where we all wished we were Two-Face.
I wish I was Two-Face.
But don't we all? But, you know, he's like, you should check this out. Like, you know, DC, I've got modern toilet paper, Steve. But,
man!
Bazinga!
Yeah, it was that bad. And it literally changed everything. It was a combination of how well written that was, how rich it was in basically presenting that universe. That was coupled with the fact that something very magical happened for DC, and that was Secret Wars.
Right.
Secret Wars was the best thing that ever happened to DC because it forced people to realize how crappy a lot of Marvel stuff really was, especially if it was written by their esteemed editor-in-chief, none other than the highly coked up Jim Shooter.
They called him John Henry from all that time he spent working on the rails. I've been holding on to that one.
Yeah, you're almost as bad as I am when it comes to, you know, this joke-ception that just sits there and lingers. It's like a sleeper cell of humor.
Speaking of jokes, and I know that we're talking about something different now, but I think we have to get into it a little bit. Can we talk about the Killing Joke a little bit?
Sir,
I think you cannot address this particular subject and not talk about the Killing Joke a little bit.
Because I forgot. Now, I've read the Killing Joke probably 20 times.
Sure.
And I just watched the animated. Now, say what you will about the animated movie. Once you get past the added first 15 minutes, I'm sure, yeah.
The most painful 15 minutes of my life.
It was it for you? I just knew I had to get past it. It was like another Spider-Man origin for me. Like, you just have to get past this. So he puts on the stupid suit. Yeah, it was rough. It was a rough 15 minutes that doesn't need to be discussed ever. But once you got to the meat of it, it was a pretty faithful adaptation. And I forgot how... Now, if you haven't read The Killing Joke, stop the podcast, go read it, go watch the movie, whatever you got to do, come back.
I've read but not watched yet.
Okay, but you know the story. And I forgot how hard... You don't usually use the sentence, "I felt for the Joker."
Oh.
Until... Especially Alan Moore. God damn it, Alan Moore is brilliant. Like, I'm reading some of the Tom Strong stuff right now, like the stuff that he did for America's Best, and it's actually like it's surprisingly good. Like, I had stayed away from it, but I'm like, screw it. I love Alan Moore. It's got to be worth reading, right. even if it's his lower rung. It's still better than 90% of what's coming out now. So I'm reading it. It's amazing. But Alan Moore can make you, and literally in 4 pages of a comic book. Go from a character that you absolutely hate for the things that he's done in the previous 90 pages to feeling the most real human emotions for that character by the last panel. Like, how do you do that? Like, how do you make the Joker the most relatable character in a Batman book where the Joker has done the most heinous things that's ever been done in a comic book at that point? Like,
well, the other thing that's brilliant that is easy to miss, because there's so damned much going on in the Killing Joke, is, you know, in speaking of the Joker as the sympathetic character, what Moore does brilliantly here is illustrate, perhaps better than anyone ever has, that very relationship between the Joker and Batman, and that not only will Batman not kill the Joker, but here, you know, the Joker's done his dead level best. This is his biggest end game ever. Mm-hmm. He's done everything he can to just push Batman, to push everybody as much as possible. And, you know, Batman's not, he won't go for it, even up to the point where at the end he actually shares a laugh,
which is so
great. His most intractable enemy. Is that not the single most amazing thing in the world?
But that joke is heartbreaking. That joke is that's the thing, is I forgot how powerful that was.
And a lot of people didn't get that.
Well, let me, if I can introduce a little bit of a thought here, I believe, honestly, that the Killing Joke is such a good story that you read it at different points in your life and you see different things.
That's
interesting.
Like, here we go. This is it's Kelly like at her finest.
So when I was working at Maverick Comic Books in 1990,
yeah, girl,
my very first job, because
preach,
I had
girl,
been shopping there,
church,
yeah, right on, and I've been shopping there for so many years since I was in seventh grade, walking there myself from my house. But it was you read these stories, and Alan Moore is just so good. He will write that story that he'll put things in it that when you grow up a little bit and you happen to see that, oh, I really liked that when I was a kid because of Section A, the artwork, or because of ha ha ha, or they were telling a joke at the end. I don't really understand because I'm a kid and I don't get it. But then you fast forward 15 years and you've grown up a little bit, and maybe if you're unfortunate, you've had some severe trauma in your life.
Right.
Then you read that book again, and it legitimizes your suffering. It brings you back. You feel sorry for the Joker and you relate because you may have at that point done something that was unforgivable.
Right. I can't be forgiven.
You're that guy. I cannot be forgiven. But then there's this weird little hope because Batman's never going to kill you.
But is that hope, or is that just free me? Free me from all. Because the thing is, there's this whole thing where people talk about how insane the Joker is. Like, oh, he's the trickster god. He's insane. He's crazy. He doesn't, you know, he's psychotic and he doesn't know what he. But that's not necessarily the case. Right?
I think that's too easy.
Yes. Yes.
It's way more complicated than. And we, as a person, we, you know, when we're 16 versus when we're 26 versus when we're 36, you change. It's exactly like Hamlet. When I read Hamlet as a youngster, I was like, great, it's Hamlet because that's cool. And then I saw it in college. Great, that's Hamlet. It's cool to be or not to be, la, 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 la. But then later on, I saw it after I had lost everything in my life and that insanity that Hamlet has. I looked at the character on stage and had a moment go, oh, my God, it's not just me. And that's the same thing that happens with the Joker, especially in an Alan Moore story.
God, you're, it's not you're just so right. me. You're so right. And it's that idea that, you know, and the joke being the two insane guys in the asylum that escape and you can't fool me. You'll just turn off the flashlight halfway across.
Exactly.
Is the Joker saying, I can't be saved. Like, you're going, eventually you're going to have to put me down because I'm never going to stop because it's the only thing I can do to atone for what I've done. You have to stop me. That's the only way I'm going to, that's the only closure I'm ever going to get, is you stopping me from the loss that I felt.
And also the way it is that, you know, essentially when you, you have Joker, does you, you have that, that suicidal bent basically built into his psyche. And but he doesn't just want, you know, he could kill himself, or he could get any number of other people to kill him. A lot of people want to. But ultimately, he needs Batman to be the one.
Right.
Again, it kind of comes down to that whole sort of Seven idea, is that there's nobody else in the world that he can be, if you will, satisfied with being killed by.
Well, that, I think a death by Batman validates his loss.
Yeah.
You know, because certainly, because if you read the Killing Joke, if you read the Alan Moore, essentially the quote unquote origin of the Joker, of the modern Joker, you know, it's a story born of loss of two men, you know, two men who have found themselves on opposing sides of a fence because they both lost. And the way that they deal with that, it wasn't the chemicals that made him go insane. You know, that's the 16-year-old Kelly, or the 16-year-old Andy, or the 16-year-old Cole. That's their reason for
at
viewing
the time,
it.
20 something.
Hey, I'm throwing you a bone here. I'm throwing you a bone here. That. And
retconning me there.
You're welcome. You're welcome. you know, but when you look at the loss, and you look at the fact that they're both laughing at the end because they've realized the impasse. They've realized that there's no way out. They're both trapped in a maze, that there's no exit. There's no egress.
Absolutely.
And that's the title, The Killing Joke.
Yeah.
There's no path.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's
the greatest foreshadowing we've ever known.
Alan Moore is the greatest writer of our generation.
That's why we were, you know, we went from doing a creator spotlight to, I think, three or four issues later, a five-issue story arc on Alan Moore.
Just on Alan Moore.
Probably still not shut up after more on more. You know, we could just do now morons for more and do another five issues.
Kelly, to lighten the mood a little bit, and as an aside, if you're from the Dayton, Ohio area, as Kelly and I are, the Dayton Mall used to have a Mavericks in it. I don't know if you remember that. Yes, it was. They've opened a new like a comic game card store in the Dayton Mall across from where the Mavericks used to be some 15 to 20 years ago. And I walked in there 2 days ago, and I'm looking around, and it's haphazard and rough. It's a rough looking little shop. And I said out loud, and my girlfriend was there, and I said out loud, I said, "I know Mavericks, and you, sir, are not Mavericks." And I just turned around and walked away. I'm a weirdo. I'm a weirdo,
And depending on their knowledge of comic shop history in the area, that might have meant absolutely.
It meant nothing to anyone besides me. It was my own validation. It was my killing joke. I can't. So let's talk about mythology. Because we've talked about, you know, all of the different characters and kind of what they represent, whether it be astrologically, whether it be, you know, mythologically, whether it be biblically. Where does the Joker fall on this scale of, you know, does how are we looking at him represented, you know, mythologically?
Mythologically. Well, it's easier to go, you know, it's always easy to go into the tricksters, the Lokis, and the stuff. I mean, we can look at Hermes. Part of what I look at when I look at characters like Jokers who are obviously based on trickster gods, like, why else would they base them on that other than just throwing the fun in it? And when you look at Hermes, he was a god of roads. He was a god of magic. He was also a god, the god that took you from your living life to your afterlife. And there are travelers. I mean, I think the Joker is a lot of like that, where he knows the area way more than we give him credit for, and he will take you on this journey, and he's going to throw in a lot of magic, and it might be the little spitting flower, and it might be the buzz in his hand, or it could also be the missile silo that he just had that delivered, and he has a buzzer in his pocket. So he can be Hermes. He could also be Ares, the god of war, the god of aggression, where he is constantly trying to make chaos. Or Eris, even, the goddess of discord, who throws the apple in the wedding that starts the Trojan War. There are dark gods there.
You probably hit the nail on the head with that particular one, because, you know, the Joker does, he thrives on creating chaos and discord. Yeah. You know, the Dark Knight explains his psyche very well through Alfred's words about some men just want to watch the world burn. What you have with the Joker is he's a force of nature.
Right.
Joker is the tornado writ small in human form. The tornado doesn't care what it hits. It doesn't have the capacity to care. The Joker is a shark on the hunt without the biological or instinctive imperatives of a shark. He is just this force that doesn't even understand what it is. And going back to the, you know, the necessary, unnecessary origin, one thing that I hate, especially David Buns, who's been on this show in the Ranker Pit, or I guess mainly Ranker Pit, but, you know, he used to, when I was Steve and I were creating our own superhero and supervillain pantheons back in the day when we were aspiring writers. He hated the fact that I had, like, you know, origin unknown, real name unknown. He says, somebody knows. And I really, what's ironic is I genuinely embrace that, even if it's never revealed, as long as you know you never get it wrong, origin. Joker, oddly enough, becomes a personal exception to the rule. I will allow you that nobody knows who the Joker is. Almost the Joker there. Nobody knows. But yeah, no one should know who the Joker is, because what that does is underscore the fact that the Joker himself has no idea. He'll wake up in the morning every day a different man.
Sure.
And he will, with a whole different set of memories. He's like worse off than Rachel in Blade Runner.
Cole, and Kelly for that matter, how familiar are you with the concepts and edicts of chaos magic?
Oh, by the way, I love the idea of familiar.
Familiar. That's like a milieu that you're really
intimately.
Are either of you at all familiar with the conceits of chaos magic? Like Levayan. If you're not, that's fine. The idea is that if you believe in magic in the sense that magic is real in our world and what it is, it's a
how the music can free you whenever it starts.
Yes, exactly like that. The idea of chaos magic is that if you realize that you live in a simulacrum. If you live essentially, for bat life, the way it's being recognized now, if you study it, is that the world is a computer program that you can write, you can code.
Okay.
And one of the concepts there, and now all of this that I've learned from Grant Morrison. So keep that in mind. I take this with a grain of salt. Grant Morrison, the comic writer, to tie it back to the Joker, because he used another chaos magician, a practicing chaos magician, regardless whether it works or not, David Bowie, as a reference for his run in Batman R.I.P. But regardless, like, the idea is that once you realize that, you can start manipulating your world. But you've got to be. But the idea is, much like every genie story ever, you've got to be really careful with your wishes, because if you aren't very, 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 very specific, then the universe comes back to bite you in the ass. Like, that's the idea. But one of the things is, like, exactly what Cole was saying, where if you try to bring on the aspect of something, and what Grant Morrison says is, like, the aspect of greed. You want the staunch, the the pillar of, the idea that you can't be moved, you can't be swayed. You might try to bring on the aspect of like a Steve Rogers, or or you want that dark vigilance, you want that take no prisoners attitude. You might try to bring about the aspect of a Batman. Like that's the idea. Well, with the Joker, he can do that every day.
Right.
But he always takes it too far. He never is specific enough with what he wants. So I think that's an interesting take, and especially what they're doing now in the comics, where there's now three Jokers. Have you followed that at all, Kelly?
I have not delved into the new.
Okay.
I was unaware of that myself. Actually, I'm vaguely aware.
Prepare yourself when you get to that point. I don't think it's a secret anymore. But Batman sat in Metatron's chair and asked who the Joker was, and the Metatron chair answered, "Well, I think the more important question is how many Jokers there are."
Wait a minute, Batman sat in the Metatron
chair at the end of the Dark Side War. Yeah, right. And that was his question. That was his only question: is who is the Joker? That was his question.
Because they're the same guy.
Because they're both insane. You could have asked anything in the world, and got an answer. No, your question is what is the Joker?
Who killed
JFK?
The thing about it is, what that does is, beyond anything else that we've ever seen in comics, bear with me here, this humanizes Batman in the most fulfilling way ever.
Right.
Because confronted with the Metatron chair, Batman does what every single human being would do, and that is freaking choke on the one question they get.
But did he? I mean, that could be the most important question.
I think we always ask those questions: what's the meaning of life? And for Batman, who is the Joker?
Has there ever been another question that Batman couldn't find an answer to?
That's true. I imagine that in his spare time, and oddly enough, he does have some spare time, used to be taken up with croquet prior to the Joker. He actually researches who the Joker might be. Between he's like, okay, enough working on the where Killer Croc's got off to. I'll dabble a little bit more in the Joker. And, he's got like this whole thing similar to Andy's.
Andy's?
War plan for tonight. His dossier.
Yeah.
He just volumes and volumes of work, and he goes back and cross references.
Are you taking up knitting? No, conspiracy theory.
Right. That's a lot of yarn that you've had dispensed from 17. You had created through 13 shell companies and had sent overseas to a holding company. And I had to buy it. I don't want anybody to know.
And like any type of textile, some of the stuff from back in the day is just, it's threadbare. It's, you go breathe on it and it disintegrates.
He has to update that every 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that the advent of polyesters,
it's all tactical and Kevlar now, Cole. Cord, it's paracord.
The old stuff, it's like, wool is great, wool is classy, but this is different. This is outside of, this isn't Bruce Wayne, this is Batman.
What?
Batman doesn't need a soft linen cloth. With his dinner, he could just, grab a piece of sandpaper off the workbench and wipe with that.
So weird.
Anyway,
you have become us, Kelly. You have become us.
Well, you said it was going to happen, and I'm just taking over my role. The thought of the Joker and the White Knight. His name escapes me right now.
David Bowie.
David Bowie, thank you. Yes, the guy who keeps reinventing himself.
Exactly.
In his thing, in his style, in the things that are important to him, over and over. And every place that he goes, he completely changes the game. Of course the Joker and David Bowie are the same guy.
They're the same person, right? I mean, in reality, they are the same.
They're the same guy.
Well, it does bring up an interesting point about the Joker reinventing himself, that if you look at the evolution of the character, as we as a society become more cynical and more distant and more outrageous, so goes the Joker. He has to keep step. Society today is what he was at his inception.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he's like, no, that's my shtick. You're stealing my thunder. I have to go and steal more thunder and become even louder, if you will.
Or
so I think,
he doesn't have to try that hard. He just has to get into an argument with somebody on Facebook.
Right?
He may not have to try that hard anymore. Like,
They probably got they probably taught the calculator into building some kind of algorithm so he could just do a push button and start 40 or 50 flame wars simultaneously.
He has a macro. He definitely has a macro that he can hit.
Yes.
Right?
I love sitting during the national anthem.
Some sort of joke. No, come on. You know as well as I do, it's going to be something about Taylor Swift, and that's it. It's all over.
Taylor Swift and the Toy Man. Go.
Yeah, that's right. It's,
oh, wow.
It's like, I'm going to let you finish. But Jason Todd's death was the... No, stop it, Kanye Joker.
But it's also the little things like, in my first real introduction to the modern incarnation of the Joker would have been in Crisis on Infinite Earths. He has a very minimal role overall, but when you first encounter him, it's Batman arriving just a hair too late to save some movie mogul that Joker's finagled out of his rights to some old movies. But he's... shot the guy dead, but with a bullet laced with something to make, leave him with this hideous rictus of a grin. And then when he's firing, pulls his pistol when the Flash appears to Batman. Yeah, kids, that happened long before Batman. When he's firing his an automatic pistol, but there's a little bang flag that pops up with each movement of the chamber. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how wickedly, evil to, throw in that little sight gag on a deadly weapon. And to me, there's a great line in Buckaroo Banzai, because when I'm not talking about Watchmen, I'm talking about Buckaroo Banzai.
True,
like you do.
Yeah, when the line, he's a vicious psychopath, he'd just as soon kill you as go fishing. And I thought, that is... The epitome of what the Joker is. He would just as soon kill you as go fishing and would be happy either way.
Right.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to kill you. He doesn't have to go fishing.
Yeah, right. It's a whim. It's almost a whim, because when he's not trying to bait Batman into doing something, he has to find something to do to fill his time.
Yeah.
And that's when the Joker's at his most creepy, is when he's not trying to bait Batman into, it's just when he's doing his weird Joker shit, like that's when stuff gets weird. Like that's when it's like, where did all the plastic Easter eggs in Gotham go? And Joker. And you just gotta start, and you're, damn it, Joker, what are you doing now?
It's like if Batman was Seinfeld, to be like, Joker.
What if Batman was it would be a show about nothing. It would be a show.
Nothing would happen.
Now it's in my head. Damn it. Now I can't. I'm never... The next 2 weeks of my life are going to be imagining what Batman would be like if it was Seinfeld.
What's up with these villains? Yeah.
What's up with Arkham Asylum? Every time I put somebody in Arkham Asylum, they get out the next day. Why do I even put them in Arkham Asylum? They got a revolving door.
Like, what's up with Two-Face? What if he loses his coin? What if he gets hungry and puts it in a vending machine?
Then
he can't decide whether or not to eat.
What does Two-Face do with the other half of his suit's joke is definitely a Seinfeld joke.
Yes, Kelly, you'll have to listen to that one as well.
I will.
Out all about these magical charities.
So, Kelly, I would...
Solely in the DC universe.
I would like to leave this with you. I think we've heard enough. You've heard enough of Cole and I talk over the last four issues. So, Kelly, what are your final thoughts on the Joker? Is there a future for the Joker in the DC universe? Are we going to see any more big changes, do you think, an evolution? Like, where are we going to go with this?
I honestly hope so. I think that Joker, like Batman, is their one DC's greatest characters. The Batman is the one they keep redoing, and as they should. But the Joker, they should keep redoing. And while I don't necessarily agree with some of the stuff they've currently done, I like parts of it. But that's the appeal. You just gotta keep plugging him into different kinds of play sets. You know, and character, you know, aspects of his character, because we as a society need the terrorism to have a white face so that we can deal with the terrorism that doesn't. It's our literature and our characters that really help us come to grasp with what's happening in our lives. The Joker represents that mirror image of us. Everybody wants to be the millionaire and save the day and have all the cool stuff and the cars. I mean, come on.
The chicks and cat suits.
Chicks and cat suits.
Exactly. Chicks and cat suits, or in my case, you get to have a purple Batgirl suit and you're Yvonne Craig. So,
R.I.P. Or if you're in my case, you get to have a little Dick Grayson running around.
Right.
And a black pants. And a sweet black turtleneck. That you can...
you and your turtleneck.
The things we discovered on this story arc.
Oh, yeah, this... Oddly enough, you would think that the Joker episode would be the one where we would go to the really dark places. Nope.
Nope, that
was the rest of the story arc. There was some...
I discovered I had a sexual fetish where I wanted to be the black turtleneck that Michael Keaton wore in Batman Returns. I didn't know that. I unpacked that on this show.
Yeah.
Don't blame you. I mean,
we still have listeners.
Well, of course, they want to hear about what we think and what you know, like
black,
ooh.
Black fetishist emails lately.
Yeah.
And he's got me on a list now. Somehow.
I bet you're on lots of
lists. I bet you're on a lot. You're like,
I'm sure I am.
You're a Schindler level of lists.
Wow.
Liam Neeson called.
That's some life-saving list.
That's it. It is.
Lists, actually.
Well, we need to end this Sicilian thing.
I want to say, though, in closing, I think in addressing what Kelly said, DC recognizes, I think, very well that Joker is one of their greatest assets. And the fact that they do continue to find a way to make this character relevant, because he infinitely invites himself to become relevant and updated and meaningful to a modern society. Yes. But we also, as a society, we want our Joker because we want our hero to confront the most terrible monster, but never in a very Nietzschean way become the monster.
Right.
Sure.
Comes damn close.
That's exactly what I said. You know, we face more trials and tribulations. I need my characters updated so that I can deal with them.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Like we were saying earlier, I think all of us touched on the fact that the Joker is definitely the catalyst. And you don't evolve without that catalyst, so we would never see our hero evolve without something to force him, and that is the Joker to the Batman.
But and even to that a certain extent, I'm gonna open a whole can of
please
worms
go.
And run
who
out
cares
of time. Harley Quinn coming in on this, giving the Joker a side that nobody really had thought of, because Batman always has the women around him and Catwoman, but here comes Harley Quinn and she makes the Joker, that's a completely different place that they had never taken him. And so he has, he might have something to lose for the first time ever, which if you watch the Suicide Squad movie, that has a little bit of tinge of that. But, and, you know, everybody wants Psychosis to be sexy, which was real weird for me, but whatever.
Wasn't it though? Wasn't it though?
Oh my God. It's just like, hey, you're a mob guy. What?
What?
The hell was that? I got an offer you can't refuse. What? So weird. So weird.
That movie went to some real weird places. It really did.
Weird, real questionable. Like, okay. You want to go Key and Peele? Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Damn it.
Okay.
I love you. This is so good.
So, yeah. So thank Bruce Timm for bringing Harley Quinn in so that we could have another whole cool section of Joker.
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. It was. We'll talk about that whole movie at another point in time.
Yeah.
But yes, that was it. Was great.
And I'll again invoke what would comic book villains do. Check out. I'll see if I can link it on here. The what would comic book villains do that featured Harley Quinn answering the question about being confided in about a friend who is seeing someone on the side, and she immediately takes it to mean that you're talking about the Joker.
Well, I hope that we have left you with a rictus grin tonight. I couldn't be more thankful for Kelly being here. She brought so much to the table. Perfect choice for this issue. I couldn't imagine anyone
else.
This
has been an amazing arc. Everybody hit their marks. Steve's like, why did you bring me on the Two-Face episode? And by the end of it, it's like, okay, yeah, that's why.
And
we chose wisely.
And so that thus ends the story arc, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for
will be greatly missed. I'm just feeling that sort of void that is filled partially with memories, but there's a part of me that'll just have to suffer through. And
yeah, until next week when we talk about.
Oh, yes. Don't meet or never meet your heroes.
Oh,
never
meet
heroes. This is I was actually talking to Catherine earlier today, and I said, I probably wind up just farting out about 65-70% of the concepts, titles, and stuff like that. But when Andy comes along and just says, well, how about we do this? It's like, okay, that's like 6 or 7 of mine. that's just like, I bring in little nuggets. And he's like, oh, look what I found in the river. Well, it's as big as a man's skull there. I had to get that piecemeal. And this one, I think you're going to find is the skull size gold nugget.
That's the greatest compliment you've ever paid me.
Wow.
So thank you to all of our guests, to Kelly, to Josh, to Catherine, to Eddie, to Steve for coming on and indulging us in this. This was a
This has been a ride.
Yeah, this was definitely this was an ego piece for us to do, and you guys made it possible, and we really appreciate that. And Cole, why don't you plug us up, and we'll get out of here and let Kelly go back to...
Oh, you'll get out of here, all right.
Kelly, go back to being actually, engaging intelligent conversation versus the occasional dick joke, so...
Yes, indeed. You can... we're coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com.
Can you do the whole thing? Can you do it?
At JCU Mail.
Now I can't stop wanting to go, okay... Okay.
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 Okay. Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
That's typical you. And watch out in the coming days, because the Jedi Cool universe is going to have a brand new look. A great announcement coming soon.
That's right. I think, are you done?
Tonight with the
okay, you're not done.
Question I ask whenever I sit in the Metatron chair. What is Andrew Farb's greatest fear?
This is my greatest fear.
Blueberry muffins, Andy.
Muffins. No! Don't bring up sins of the past on my show.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Honestly,
in closing, Kelly probably has more actual damning information on me than anyone on the face of the earth, now that I think about it.
Yep.
I just went through the Rolodex of every night for 3 years, sitting in a booth at Denny's, like, oh no, oh, yeah. This is bad. Oh, yeah. This is real bad. I gotta keep her happy. And not run for office ever. All right, guys. Well, join us next.
She's like Analog Snowden.
She's Analog. Get I make a comic book character where she's Analog Snowden? That would be the best name. All right, we're ending this now. We're doing it. Join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics, and as always, buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. This has been a great run. Thank you again, Kelly. We can't be thankful enough.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Say good night, everybody.